Previously on the Game On Podcast.
Did I read somewhere in my notes here that they used to row across Port River to get to Alberton twice a week?
Correct. So Dad would often, Pop would, because at this stage when the boys were playing football, Pop had obviously finished playing for Port. So sometimes there'd be two in the dinghy, sometimes, you know, the four of them, three boys and Pop. Mainly when Dad was going, him and his father would row across the river. So they Pop would build these rowboats, like these, not canoes, but dinghies, and Pop and Dad would row across the river, pull up on the ladder across the road at the wharf, climb the ladder, tie the dinghy off, climb the ladder, walk down to Alberton.
It's hard to believe, isn't it?
It's hard to believe, yeah. You're talking of quite a prominent footballer here in his heyday. And Dad would drop Pop off at the Alberton Hotel. And Dad would continue on to football training and train. And then on the way back, 6 o'clock closing in those days, as we know.
Will. Yep.
And there's Pop out the front of the Alberton Hotel waiting for his son. And they'd walk back down to the wharf, climb down the ladder. And there's the dinghy tied up to the ladder. And then they'd row across the family home again at Birkenhead.
Sportscast SA presents Game On. Game On. South Australian's destination for everything sports. Local, national and international sports. AFL football, soccer, basketball, golf, baseball, tennis, cricket, and any other sports played in this wide world. And we're going to have a blast doing it. So sit back, relax, and let's do this thing. Welcome to Game On.
Welcome to Game On. My name's Pete. Once again in the studio with Malcolm and Quinny, part one there. Fantastic, the whole interview, which part two is going to be coming up a little bit later on today. But amazing to think rowing across the Port River to get to training and leaving the old man at the pub and then collecting him on the way through is a great story.
Yeah, and it was a unique interview. Like, it was touching areas where obviously you don't touch very often in terms of war and all that. And yeah, just and it was enormous good. Respect for Quinny.
Absolutely.
And you know, someone obviously known for donkey's years, and yeah, he's a huge figure in cricket, but that was the most I've ever been into it. Mm-hmm. With his dad either.
Like, yeah.
I've spoken to him a little bit privately about his dad, but never to that extent.
Yep.
And
it was good because of Anzac, the Anzac game, and obviously the Bob Quinn medal being presented. It was interesting just to hear a family member's point of view of how that all came about, and as we said, part two of that interview coming up today, and I agree, fantastic.
And I've spoken to Greg since, and Quinny was really grateful, and he said he thought we did a really good job with it and let him go and thought it was really engaging. And so, yeah, he was complimentary as well. So it was good.
Always great to hear some positive feedback.
Exactly.
All right, mate, let's get into Around the Grounds.
Around the Grounds.
Now we'll talk the SANFLW, which is back from state duties this week. We'll talk about that a little bit, the cricket, and obviously Greg Quinn part two. But before we get off to today's episode on the AFL, we'll just let everybody know that over the next couple of weeks, I'm actually off the podcast on the basis that I've got have a small little operation. So we've got some special episodes already pre-recorded, or we picked our favourite episodes over the last couple of years, and Malcolm picked Neil Craig and I picked Mark Bickley. So just look out for those ones there, because we won't be obviously recording as per normal.
Pete's the technological side of it. And, that's not my strength, I readily admit. So all the best to Pete with his op, and we'll go from there.
Thank you very much, mate. Hopefully it won't be off too long on the pine, so to speak. Yes. All right, let's get into the AFL straight away. Let's talk, it seems like forever ago, but
yeah.
the Showdown 55, the fallout from that.
It does seem...
It was a gutsy performance from Adelaide, but you're right, it does seem like forever ago, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's quite extraordinary that it seems so long ago. Yeah, it was. Geez, 5 goals, 18, and some of the goals Port missed. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest, if that's cricket, and that's another nationality, we're accusing that of match-fixing. Mm-hmm. Was their kicking for goals that bad?
There was 4 or 5 that were rushed, but you're right, there were a few. As well. And look, Boak, I think, hit the post twice, yeah. So you go, well,
yeah.
6 inches one way, it's a goal, 6 inches the other way, it's the same result. So, but a gutsy effort from Adelaide on the basis that they just looked so hungry for the ball all night long.
Yeah, they looked up for it more than what Port did, which was a bit bizarre, really. Mm-hmm. Soligo is fast becoming a key midfielder, no doubt about that.
I mean, he's taken a little while to flourish, but he seems to have got his head, his head and his mojo in the game a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think they've also shown some faith in him, and I think that's a very, very good point for Adelaide, is that Michael Annie, they showed some faith in right from the get-go. They need to show a little bit in Curtin. They did trade up to get him, so there's no point in holding him back. Let's see what the young fella can do.
Well, they desperately had to get some pace in the midfield, and they've tried it a bit with Rochelle and Rankin interchanging, but to get a full-time midfielder in there is probably more a natural midfielder than the other two. Mm-hmm. Is exactly what they desperately needed, because it was such a muchness of the same. And you were sort of going... And I think Soligo might be a bit quicker than we realised too. So he gives us that bit more burst than I thought he was capable of.
Yep.
So,
seems very strong through the hips as well.
Yeah.
I just thought Jordan Butts being back in the back line there just sort of balanced that back line a lot better than what they could have ever imagined. I mean, Murray's still to come back, obviously, and he's a key pillar in that defensive structure, but it's almost a case of everyone's playing all right at the moment, and injury.
I think Keane's probably a bit better than we realised as well, and he's probably, again, because he hasn't grown up playing footy, he's picking things up now as an adult, so it's probably a ratio of a potential improvement, and he's doing that consistently.
But that's impressive, though.
We get Stanaher this week now, so he's got another big test.
Yep.
And Hipwood as well, although Hipwood's a bit hit and miss.
Mm-hmm.
But, a few injuries for Brisbane out of yesterday. It was quite interesting. We'll cover that later.
We will cover that a little bit later. But, obviously, Soligo getting better and better each week goes on. Opposite side, Port Adelaide. What were Port thinking, taking such a huge risk with Connor Rosie? And we did flag this a little bit, but I listened back to our podcast, and we were very like, no, if the medical staff say he's ready to go because they have 8 million tests, then he's ready to go. Where did it go so wrong? And will this cost them moving forward? And did they panic against the Crows by playing him?
Yeah, well, he would have put his hand out to play, and then you want to play, and he's done all the tests, he's done all the running power and all that. But obviously you're not testing at match conditioning, and But he didn't look right from ball one.
Last week, late in the game, didn't look good.
And the bit Hinkley to say he hasn't done more damage, I will be amazed if he hasn't torn more fibres and different fibres than the first time.
Mm-hmm.
As someone who unfortunately knows injuries too well. I'll be surprised. And now he'll have to miss at least 3.
Well, I knew they were ruling him out automatically already for round 9, but, geez, such a big risk. Now, leading on from that, is it the coach's responsibility, the player's responsibility, or the medical staff's responsibility to make that final call?
Generally, the medical staff are given the thumbs up. It's their call, and the coach doesn't get to overrule it. So if Hinkley overruled the medical thing, I think that would be out and about in public by now, and it's not. So I just think be out within, I'm sure would have got out.
Mm-hmm.
But
you've got the coach coming out going, it was my responsibility, I take ownership.
Oh, yeah, and
then
you
got Rosie coming out and saying, well, it's actually my call.
Yeah.
There just seems to be a lot of moving parts there that don't quite make too much sense on that one there. We'll stay with Port Adelaide just for a second. Jason Horne-Francis looked unusually frustrated on the night. Is that a case of him not getting his way a little bit, or did Adelaide do their homework on him?
Maybe a little bit, but also you get frustrated 5-8, missing goals, and they should have been in the game, obviously, a lot more. So, Yeah.
And his last quarter, I mean, he almost put them on his back, didn't he? But
I think we can jump it.
He just looked visibly frustrated, which I can understand.
Yeah, I think we can jump at everything, though. So yep. I think it's one of those things.
All right, we'll stay with the showdown. But in general with the AFL, milestone games and retirements always seem to bring out the best in teams. But is that a worry that you've got to get yourself up for some of those games?
Yeah, I think it's overdone there. You're thinking, I'm going to go harder because Rory Sloane's actually retired, when deep down we've all known he's been retired for about 2 months.
And he hasn't been on the field at all this season. Yeah,
so I take that with a grain of salt. I just think, and I think we've probably overanalyzed 5-18. If that's 10-12, it's game on. So I
know it's a simplistic view like that, but you're right. If Port had kicked a little more accurate, the score would have been a lot closer. Yeah.
So.
All right, has Adelaide got the wood on Port now with winning 4 out of the last 5?
Well, it's funny. If you actually go down showdown history, it seems to follow this tack where Port won 7 in a row at one stage, and I think Josh Carr holds the record. I think he's 10.
Yep.
10 showdowns, 10 wins, which is just – so it's, well, it seems to have followed that path for a while.
Dawson, since he's arrived, has won 4 out of the last 5, so or 4 out of 4. So – maybe he's after Josh Carr's record. Yeah. You never know. We'll stick with Port Adelaide and Adelaide, but just talking a little bit about the game and also what else needs to be going on. But both for Adelaide and Port Adelaide, O'Brien versus Sweet, who do you think got the better of that duel there?
Oh, I thought it was pretty line ball. I didn't really think either one. Yeah,
I totally agree. Top, totally agree with you.
I thought it was just line ball.
Yep, absolutely. All right, we'll go with Adelaide first. Matty Crouch, proven that he's got elite hands, but I don't want to see him kicking blindly out of the middle. Yeah, or disagree?
Agree.
His hands have been fantastic the last couple of weeks. So just every now and then when I see him blindly turn and just dump the ball forward, it does worry me a little bit. Anyway, okay. Do you see Dowling getting a run in the next 4 weeks?
Hope so. I would have picked him by now. I'm well and truly. I've been very clear on that.
Yep. Has Brodie Smith got much more to offer the Crows this year?
No.
I tend to agree with you on that one there.
Unfortunately, Father Time's caught up.
Yep. And we will talk about this a little bit more as we get to this week's games. But Brisbane a little bit banged up. Are the Crows going to get them at the right time?
Well, it doesn't hurt in terms of that way. So they lose McCarthy. It looks like McCarthy and Gardner have both done ACLs.
Yep.
Jeez, there's going to be some more selection this mid-season draft than people worried. As a Nord man, I'm worried about that. Mm-hmm. So Answorth won't play, and probably Starcevic hurting the calf in the warm-up. Well, you'd be surprised. Calf's generally not a one-weeker. So
no, not anymore, it ain't.
You'd think all those four won't play. So
it does open it up a little bit, but Adelaide have still got to obviously win the game.
Good to see young Morris that he debuted after having McDonald's.
Yes.
Which should be encouraged. And would have been good if you had 3 or 4 beers as well. Yeah.
We'll talk about that one a little bit later as well in our AFL sort of hot topics for this week. But we'll just finish off on Port Adelaide first. Port Adelaide beaten in the SANFL. Is their depth not as deep as we think? Is it because they've recruited for the here and now in that, obviously, the AFL side?
Yeah, I think it is. It is shallower than I thought it was going to be. No doubt about that.
Same here.
Having watched them against Nord Saturday night. Mm-hmm. And, that was a little bit different because of their injuries at AFL level.
Mm-hmm.
So they withdrew Cleary, McEntee and Burton from their named side, so made it weaker. But I'm watching some of the kids and thinking, there hasn't been much development yet.
Is it a case of they've got their AFL side with, a lot of game players, a lot of talent, and then they're at the opposite end where they're still developing a lot of their youngsters? They don't really have too many that are in that in-between area?
Yeah, a little bit.
And that's what it worries me with Port's depth.
I'd also seen watch Cleary play the week before against Woodville West Torrens, and he struggled, made a couple of shocking errors and thought, gee, it's a bit of a worry there, Aaron. He seems like he's gone backwards from a guy who was a reasonable AFL player that at the moment, that game and then one earlier game of the year I watched a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, gee, he looks further away now than when
yep.
he played. So
it's amazing how confidence can disappear quite quickly. A couple of little mistakes. If the body language is anything to go by, coach and captain didn't have much love for each other last week, with both of them sitting on the bench there through that last quarter between Port and the Crows, Rosie and Hinkley I'm talking about.
Again, frustration. Frustration, and probably both them blaming themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the game not quite Rosie going their way.
Rosie sitting there, geez, I'm about to lose another showdown. I put my hand out to play. I shouldn't have. Geez, I'm an idiot. Hinkley thinking, geez, I wish we hadn't played. So, I get that. One of those things.
Does Adelaide have the wood on Port?
Well, I hope so. But,
but you're right. Looking at the pattern. Look at the pattern. Yeah. Last one on Port Adelaide. Have teams worked out Port Adelaide's one wood?
It's a big there. I think they're too predictable. They go to Dixon too much. And so teams realise that. And therefore, I'd like them to try it. Why not try something? Put Marshall on a wing for a while. Now, Finlayson should have played, so that was an error.
Mm-hmm.
I think Marshall was a bit similar to Westhoff.
Yep.
And I'd let him run around the field a bit more. He's not a bulk and out-body player.
Yep. So just on that, do you think that Port Adelaide lost pretty much all that game at the selection table?
They didn't help themselves, put it that way. But I do think their game plan is way too Dixon-focused.
Because Adelaide seemed to take away the corridor.
Yeah, a little
bit. Every opportunity Adelaide went, they went wide before they started to slingshot up the ground.
And while Butters still got a lot of the ball, he didn't really probably get it in the spots to hurt Adelaide. Yep, so absolutely. I think that was pretty crucial.
Yep. And then obviously Rosie not being at 100% didn't exactly help that. And Jason Horne-Francis later in the game certainly put his hand up to try and win the game. And gee, you thought there for a minute there he was actually going to do it. So, all right, we'll leave the showdown there. It's been a huge few days. Adelaide obviously with the bragging rights at the moment for the first meeting of 2024. We'll see how the second meeting pans out. Let's move on to the hot topics around the AFL. Big 2 weeks for Draper holding the ball here in Adelaide that should have been given, and his Bevo comments. What are your thoughts on that, mate?
Look,
because, I mean, we're in the podcasting game, so we do have some mail sometimes.
Yeah, I will say on the Draper one, as an umpire, we've all done it, where you don't want to make the decision which pay is the end decision of game.
Mm-hmm.
You want the players to decide the game. If that's in the first quarter, that's getting paid.
Yep.
It was a mistake, but won't be the first umpire. It is human. It won't be the last. And let's also forget, I get really annoyed, the comments on the Crow supporters on that. I will still say now, as an Adelaide Pistons, the biggest error of what's happened this year is the clubs allowing that Gold Coast to have the advantage in round two to play, already played a game before anyone else. That's far bigger than an umpiring decision. And all the other clubs should have gone together with that and gone, no, if you're going to have a round one, an opening round, whatever you want to call it,
all of those teams must play
each other in round two.
Yep.
And that was, for mine, way more important than an umpiring decision. Yep.
Fair call. And we'll see if the AFL make changes to that heading into next year as well. Surprise win for the Hawks, defeating the Bulldogs. And that probably leans on a previous comment about Draper and his comments towards Bevo, is that it's a huge week for the Western Bulldogs.
And you've got there, Hawthorn defeated the Bulldogs last game last year, where the Bulldogs should have played finals and Hawthorn beat them down there. So they seem to have the bit of the wood on the Dogs at the moment.
Isn't that funny? Adelaide have the wood on Carlton. Essendon have the wood on Adelaide.
Yeah.
Adelaide have the wood on Port Adelaide. And Collingwood have the wood a little bit on Carlton at the moment, and Hawthorn have it on the Bulldog. Just funny how trends work that way.
Yeah.
Do you think it was disrespectful for Draper to come out and sort of say that if Bevo's there next year, that there's going to be players that are going to be requesting trades?
I don't think it's the smartest thing to say.
No, but is there a little bit of truth in it?
I think so. Yeah, I reckon there is.
Where there's smoke, there's fire, isn't there? Yeah. We'll move on. Have you seen the Stengel, Fritch, Dacos and Rankin goal this weekend?
Yeah.
Which one out of them at the moment is goal of the year for you?
Stengel, in terms of the difficulty of the goal.
Yeah, because he had to twist, turn and kick on the opposite foot. Yeah, yep.
But also Dacos on the timing.
Yes.
As well.
He hit the ground running. What about Rankins, where he cut through three players?
Very hugely skilled. It was a hugely skilled goal. There was no doubt. If anything, I think that's probably more skilled than what the Stengel one was. Where I think the Stengel was good, but also, it had a fair bit of not class ass in terms of
He had to think his way through it a little bit.
So, and it's a line ball.
And then the last one is probably Fritsch, where he's on the boundary and just beautiful control. I mean, if I'm having anybody kick for my life over the next week or so, I want him in front of goal for me. He just doesn't miss very often.
We keep telling Roger Woodcock, we'll wheel him out in the wheelchair, let him kick the goal and he can sit down again.
Yep, fair call. Maybe Stengel or Fritsch, maybe goal of the year. I was impressed with Rankin's goal
as
well.
They're all very good goals.
If you're advertising AFL football to anybody that's not from Australia, it's a huge week for that. Yep. Is Gawn the best ruckman by a long way?
Yeah, I think at the moment he is. I think it's impact. His taps to advantage are clear taps to advantage. They're not the O'Brien tap, dump, kick forward.
Yep.
His ability to impact around the ground, kick a long goal.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, his kicking for goals not reliable.
No.
But he's probably – he nails it probably from 50-plus.
Yes, more often than not.
Yeah, he's – yeah. So, that last quarter, he was the one who won the game.
Yep, yep. Coaches are under more pressure than ever, and it's showing with more and more coaches showing their feelings openly at the moment. Is this a good thing or a bad thing?
I think this game is just so heavily scrutinised, and it's 24/7.
The pressure's on, isn't it?
Yeah, there's more. There's so much media, so much, And don't dare think Kane Corns is saying what he really thinks. It's designed for clickbait and he gets paid,
out of hand. So, he's there to be the antagonist.
Yeah, so.
Exactly right.
There's lots of things happening there as well.
This is a good one for you, mate, being an umpire. Holding the ball and pushing the back seems to have gone out the window. Why and how has this happened?
I hate it in terms of in the back. In the back and over the shoulder are very rarely played. There are so many tackles where the first decision should have been, that's a poor tackle.
Yep.
And it's not. And then what generally you then get the pack situation and the poor bastard down the bottom, and it's quite often pushed back under by his own team.
Mm-hmm.
He gets pinged for that. I hate that.
Yep.
I really hate it. And, there are now. Also, one thing, though, there has never been a rule dropping the ball, and a lot of people get that mixed up. There is... if there's a force of the tackle and it knocks it clear, play on, unless it's incorrect disposal because he's therefore been retarded and the umpire considers he has a reasonable amount of time to get rid of the ball. Now, it's a crazy game to umpire footy where in netball it's 3 seconds. There's no set time. Like, there was one in the Crows game where, that should have been paid holding the ball, but I think the umpire thought it had flicked his foot. So I can see why the umpire didn't pay it.
Did we, question without notice, did you feel like the showdown, the umpires got it right most of the night? Because it just seemed like they were on top of it night long.
Yeah,
I thought it was a good umpiring night for them.
Yeah, I thought they were
I agree
reasonable.
As well.
Yeah.
And obviously, you've talked obviously pushing, holding the ball there. Pushing the back seems to have completely disappeared, which is quite weird. And
I've got a real bugbear on that.
Yeah. Yep, maybe we'll cover that once I'm back in play, mate. How is it possible, and you did flag it a little bit earlier, that a player that can play VFL or slash SNFL or waffle is then required to play an AFL game? How is that possible in today's professional nature?
Well, you're also keen that you want the person to still play. So there they are, Brisbane, they've passed it. Now, if you hold someone back, they then don't play for a fortnight. You put them further out. So you can effectively be the 24th player and you get shunted back to 27, 28. It's one of those things. It's very, very rare that someone breaks down.
Like you said, he had some Maccas on the way and like you said, some soup and a couple of beers would have just topped it off. But 2 minutes into the game, he kicks his first goal, debuts and gets his first goal.
is one thing. At least the kid hasn't hit the, he's not overcome with nerves, because it's just chuck on the gear, get out there, play.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things. But
and he was borrowing Will Ashcroft's boots, yeah, which were a size too small.
Yeah, that's incredible.
That's incredible.
Yeah,
absolutely. Last couple on the
sorry. Now let's go back to that though. Yep. I am still surprised. If you're one of the emergencies,
yes,
if it's one of three, you're still at an outside chance with a person in the warm-up to break down. While that's not very rare,
mm-hmm,
I'm surprised he didn't at the very least have his gear with him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't get that.
Yep.
I question the...
Well, poor planning by the club, yeah, really, because it was that in transit, yeah, or so the story goes.
Yeah.
Is it a case of lower leagues or reserves competitions then adjusting their schedules to be able to work this out so that way players are not having to basically play 6-7 quarters within one day?
Oh, but again, that's then if you're doing that, you're the AFL game's the last game, so therefore are you holding a player back and him not playing? Mm. I've got no problem.
Yep.
Problem. It's one of those things.
Yep. It just happens from time to time.
It might happen, but I'm surprised they didn't have a gear with him. That's mm-hmm. I'm not critical that he's already played a game.
Yep.
Because
no, he needs
decided
to play.
That Stastvic gets through the warm up, but if he injures himself in the first minute going for the ball, that's just bad luck. Mm-hmm. Now, the rules have now changed. It used to be once you'd handed over the team sheet,
that was it.
That was it. So they've now relaxed that. So they've made the rule different. Mm-hmm. Before the game starts, you can make a change.
Yep.
So yeah.
Would that change? He was sub. Obviously, had to come in as sub because they needed to rearrange the team sheet a little bit there. With him already playing, that actually gave him time to get himself sort of ready for the game? Or do you almost chuck him in straight away because he's pretty much warmed up and ready to go?
Oh, no, he becomes a sub, and the sub,
yep,
he mightn't apply it.
That's right.
So it's just one of those things.
Catch-22s. All right, last couple, mate, before we finish up on the hot topics. Have we gone too early on the Gold Coast? Hardwick seems to be cycling through his players. Did you just see who he wants and who he wants to trade? That's what it looks like from the outside.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. They were certainly disappointing yesterday in terms of they had everything go for them with Brisbane's injuries, and to not really be competitive,
yep,
was staggering. That you would have thought they were going to run all over Brisbane, just purely no interchange, mm-hmm, all that side of things. And, yeah, so they seem to get stage fright a bit against Brisbane, though.
They do.
So,
but yeah. I do believe that Hardwick's just finding his way, yeah, with what players he thinks is within that 80%,
yeah,
that is towards their,
yeah,
finals, and potentially premiership aspirations.
Yep.
Last one, mate, on the AFL, and this is one of my big bugbears, and I know it will be yours as soon as I read it out to you. The AFL needs to stop advertising when records are set or nearing where they say VFL/AFL record holders. That is disrespectful to other state leagues like the SANFL and the WAFL.
Yeah, I still get it in terms of it was an extension. I still think it's an extended VFL now, yes, let alone that's another debate.
Yep.
So I get that, but yeah, I think there's times it can be done better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just hate hearing it because,
yeah,
you know, we should be taking all the records, or once the last team came in 91 that made it truly national, or 97 when it made it truly national, thereabouts, then
I still
really
say
the records should happen from there.
Yeah, I still say it's an add-on from that comp. I still understand why, but I think there are certain times it could be done better. I'm not as probably hell-bent on that,
yep,
as some people are.
Well,
I don't agree with them saying that Port Sandful premiership should be included, mm-hmm, because that's quite ridiculous, because that was a separate competition,
yep,
you know, where Collingwood, Carlton, et cetera, were playing in the VFL, and so it's an extension. So.
But the VFL still exists,
yeah,
in Victoria and reverted to the AFL.
No, that's the
VFL. It's a big debate. It's a huge debate.
I don't see it like that, but that's fine.
Anyway, we'll move on. All right, let's take a very, very quick break. When we come back, SNFL, SNFLW cricket, and past players, past legends, Greg Quinn.
Are dents and scratches putting a dent in your day? Introducing Rogerstein Crash Repairs Adelaide, your trusted solution for automotive woes. With over two decades of expertise, Rogerstein Crash Repairs guarantees top-notch service, restoring your vehicle to its former glory in no time. From minor dings to major collisions, our skilled technicians handle it all with precision and care, using state-of-the-art equipment and techniques.
Rogerstein Crash Repairs saved my car. It looks brand new.
Fast, friendly and reliable. I wouldn't trust anyone else with my vehicle. Don't let accidents slow you down. Visit Rogerstein Crash Repairs Adelaide at 14 Penner Avenue, Glynde, for quality service you can count on. And here's a special offer just for our listeners. Mention this podcast and receive a $100 discount on your repair. Rogerstein Crash Repairs Adelaide. Excellence in every repair.
All right, mate, I jumped the gun a little bit on there in getting to the SNFL, SNFL and W and the cricket. We've actually got to do our tips for this week. Carlton v Melbourne.
Yeah. I'm going to go for Carlton to rebound.
I like the way you're thinking, mate.
I thought the Carlton-Collingwood, I don't watch, you know, all games and all that, but Friday night I was probably invested in that game and thought that was a bloody good game of footy to watch.
It ebbed and flowed beautifully,
yeah,
didn't it?
Yeah.
Yep. I'm going to go Carlton as well, just Geelong v Port Adelaide.
Geelong at
GM, GMHBA Stadium. I'm going to pick Geelong as well. The Dockers v the Swans. Swans are impressive at the moment.
Yeah, a bit hard to tip against them at the moment. Big game over there, and I'd give the Dockers a genuine chance, but you've probably got to go Sydney.
Dockers have just tweaked a few things at the moment that is working for them, but I think Sydney are just going to be that little bit too strong. Hawthorn v St Kilda.
In Hobart, I want to see whether Sicily comes up. I'll probably go St Kilda, but if Sicily comes up... I think it's probably a genuine 50-50 game.
I'm almost tempted to tip a draw here. I'm going to go St Kilda, but I'm a bit like you. Sicily plays, it changes it just that little bit. Essendon v the Giants.
Yeah, I'll go the Giants to rebound.
I think they will be dirty after last weekend, and I reckon they're going to rip Essendon a new one out at Marvel Stadium, although Essendon play all right at Marvel, don't they?
Hmm. Yeah.
Interesting, but I'm still going to stick with the Giants. Richmond v. the Bulldogs.
Ooh.
Wow.
Yeah.
Talk about flip of the coin.
Yeah, I'll go Bulldogs. I still just think Richmond have got too many out.
Yep. Injuries for me as well for Richmond. So, yeah, Bulldogs for me. The Suns v. North Melbourne.
Suns.
That is up in Darwin.
Yeah.
I go the Suns as well. Collingwood v. the Eagles.
Collingwood.
And to finish us off on Sunday twilight or mid-afternoon, Mother's Day clash, Adelaide v. the Brisbane Lions.
Yeah, again, I want to see who Brisbane... I think Brisbane... You've probably got to go for Adelaide because Brisbane are going to have a few out.
Yep.
Like four changes. Zach Bailey still not back for a few. So Bailey, Gardner and McCarthy out of their forward line is a fair bit out of your forward line.
If your Adelaide's backs with them just trying to, you know, put together a cohesive group, it's probably the right week for them to do that. All right, let's move on to the SNFL, mate. Round five matches. Adelaide defeating Port Adelaide in the pre-showdown showdown.
Yeah, Adelaide probably just a bit too classy. Probably the margin was the surprising part there, but Burgess had a fair bit of impact.
I liked Adelaide's structure last week. That's what I like in this. Mickey Godden's a great coach.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
I thought Adelaide would win, but I'm surprised they won that easy.
Yep, that's agreed. Norwood just getting over the line against North Adelaide in a bit of a seesawing clash in the end.
Yeah.
Norwood looked like they had it under control early, but then North Adelaide just kept plugging away.
Yeah, it was an arm wrestle. To Xavier Trantha's credit, came up from the reserves, and look, he hasn't been setting the world on fire in the reserves, probably just doing the role a bit. And arguably had his most impactful game at league level, kick three, should have been four.
Yep.
So that was a big tick for the Nord selection panel. You've got to give them that because a couple other selections I personally would go in different directions.
Yep.
So, yeah, and to have Kennelly and Ling both pull out, or Kennelly was out Thursday, but yep. Ling pull out on the Saturday. So that was 30-odd quality possessions, not going the other way. Probably where the pleasing thing is, Norwood are just hard at it. The intensity, look, we're not going to, Norwood aren't going to blow a side away. That's unless Callow probably plays and kicks five or six. Yep. So it's going to be workmanlike, organised defensively, structure.
Yep.
Jack Hurd obviously leading the defence.
Wear teams down a little bit that, and then...
Yeah. And the other point too is round two, Harry Boyd took a Glenelg kid making his league debut to the Cleaners.
Mm.
Was similar on Saturday. They North decided they'd play Hart, you know, play Harvey up forward. The kid on, don't worry about the name, I think the name is. But yeah, Boyd just absolutely annihilated him.
Yep.
So at the moment, he's, you know, out of the Nord's five games, it's almost looked like he's been lucky enough to play against work experience kids. It's
yep.
two out of the five.
Yep. And,
yeah, uh-huh. Just the most impactful player on the ground by a long, long
yes,
way.
Yes, some tough games coming up, so we'll yeah. see how that all goes. Central's just getting over the line against West Adelaide.
Yeah, it did enough, though. It wasn't
impressive, but it wasn't clean. But yeah, did enough. And West Adelaide were very, very competitive there. Glenelg getting over South Adelaide there reasonably comfortably.
Yeah, it was only 1 point the difference at half time. Yeah. But yeah, then they did pull clear. And South have got some good kids, but yeah, they're in for a year.
Struggle a little bit. And then for me, it was probably match of the round down at Thomas Farms Oval there, or Unley Oval. Sturt and Woodville West Torrens in an absolute thriller, really, in the end.
Yeah, Woodville West Torrens kicked the last four goals of the game. Mm. Bit of criticism, and it's not the first time where it's happened, where Sturt, in the eyes of some people, decide to try and save the game, not keep going and try and win it.
Yes.
So, yeah, interesting there again. That's.
But Marty Matten has never been known as a really attacking coach.
He's more a defensive coach. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, and that's fine. So yeah. That Sturt's one word.
That's right.
I've got no problem with that. Yeah. But they'd kick six in the third quarter, got on top.
Yep.
I reckon this time you've got it there. Keep being attacked. Keep roll of the dice.
Step on the throat and make it count. All right, let's move on to round six games, mate. Norwood v Adelaide at... as you call it, the home of footy at Cooper Stadium on Friday night.
Yes, I reckon I might start getting dressed now with enough clothing for the scoreboard for Friday night.
Yep.
Yeah, I'll tip the legs.
Yep, I'll go Norwood there just as well. Centrals v Sturt. It's going to be a good game. It's out at the Ponderosa.
Yeah, because it's out at the Ponderosa, I'll go the Dogs.
Go the Doggies as well. They're very, very impressive. Port Adelaide v North Adelaide.
Yeah, while it's at Alberton, I'll still go North.
Ooh, still go North. Yep. Port's injuries are going to be the worry for me. You know, if two or three of their AFL-listed players don't come up,
big trouble. In the fact that they're playing, so once the AFL game's Friday night.
Yep.
Yeah, that player would be able to fly back to play on the Saturday. True, he will be back. But if they get a couple of injuries Friday night, then they hold players over again.
Yep.
So you won't see.
And I'll go North Adelaide there as well. The Eagles v the Panthers.
Eagles
for me, and the Tigers v the Bloods.
Tigers.
So some interesting games there with probably Adelaide and Norwood and Sturt and the Bulldogs being probably the two that you'd be looking at.
Yeah, Sturt and the Dogs are probably the game of the Dogs and Sturt is probably the game of the round.
Yep. Yes, NFL ladder, Central's and Norwood sitting top with 5 wins apiece, top and second. Woodville West Torrens third, Glenelg fourth, and Sturt in fifth. So ladder's just starting to take a little bit of shape.
And also in Norwood and North play each other in the reserves 3 weeks in a row.
Yeah, we talked about this.
Yes, so I've said to a couple of the Norwood boys, I reckon you've got to make sure you've at least got your phone number of your opponent. So we're saying it's the AFL trial for the best of three grand final series, where the guinea pigs and Norwood are 2-0 up.
So
yes.
So we shouldn't have to play the third one, really.
Go the Robinson's Crusaders.
There you go. Maybe they could just sit back and enjoy a beverage or two watching some of the AFL football on the day there. All right, let's move on to the SANFLW. Congratulations go to the South Australian women's team defeating WA in WA. Probably cements our places the best league outside of the AFL? So. I think both so. In the men's and the ladies.
Yeah, I think we've certainly got big claims on that at the moment. I thought the girls, we know that was a pretty strong side. Bates coming, how she's not an AFL list has me buggered.
Mm-hmm. AFLW. Obviously, list, best on ground as well.
Yeah, having watched her a few times, she can. Yeah, there's way worse players on AFL list than her. And Shelby Smith combining on the midfield.
Yep.
And yeah, so a good effort and a good result.
And it was a tightish contest for a while there. And the Crow Eaters, the South Australian team, just found a way to be a bit harder at it. And that pressure really sort of held them in good stead. So
did enough. And well done to Courtney Cramie and the assistants. Well done.
Absolutely. Big tick there for them as well. All right, let's move on to round. What are we up to in the SNFLW? Round 9, Sturt v. the Bulldogs.
I'll go the Dogs.
I'll go the Doggies there. Norwood v. North.
Yes, I'll go the Legs.
I'll go the Leggies there as well. The Eagles v. the Panthers.
Panthers.
And the Tigers v. the Bloods.
Tigers.
We're all in agreement there. No point in reading the ladder positions there because they have stayed the way they were for the last couple of weeks.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to cricket. South Australian link to the T20 World Cup in USA. Your thoughts on it being in the USA? Is this a good thing for cricket, or is this good promotion, or is it? I'm not sure how to feel about it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'd like to know what grounds they've managed to come up with, the size and dimensions, how many people it can go.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, with so many diverse populations in the USA that you know. The Indian and Pakistani games, and that'll be sellouts well and truly.
Yes.
It is different. It's certainly correct. Why not have a crack to try and get sport cricket in a higher profile in one of the biggest countries in the world?
Yep. So. There is a South Australian link to that, the final or the where the pitches are being made. The South Australian crew here from the Adelaide Oval have been hands-on right from the get-go in getting the best drop-in pitches available. And from all accounts, from what I'm hearing, is that they're pretty much all on track to hit the brief, but also have some interesting wickets ready for that final.
Oh, it's a big tick to the South Australian ground, to Damien and the South Australian ground staff. Well done.
Absolutely. We'll stick with cricket. Pekoski retained by Victoria. Is this a risk considering the medical review is looming? What are your thoughts on that, mate?
Look,
health is so important.
I don't understand how he's still. It should happen well before now. I think it's madness.
Yep.
You know how he was allowed to bat again in a second 11 game here with a medical bit of how many times he hit, and then it was delayed concussion to miss the next game. I'm sorry, I'm still mystified how he was passed medically there, and I don't understand by now how many times he's been concussed.
Mm-hmm. Are they clutching at straws a little bit? It seems this way that they're giving him every opportunity, but like the footballers, they almost need to be told no.
It just does not make any sense.
Yeah, you need to be medically retired.
This should have happened ages ago.
I don't want to see the young fella retire, don't get me wrong. But if it's going to continue to put himself in danger of some sort of serious injury later on.
I think he's been I think he's up to nearly 10 times. I think he managed to concuss himself fielding where he rolled onto his head going to back a ball up. Well, I'm sorry. It's happened way too many times.
Yep.
And I think it's unfair to the bowlers that he's still going.
Yep.
I just think by now it should have happened. I just don't get it.
We'll leave that one as it is and we'll report back when we have some news. But, yeah, it's a big surprise for me, hence the reason why I put it on the run sheet today, mate. Aussies going pretty well in county cricket. Hanscom hitting a century at Lords. Good signs.
He's a good player at that level in terms of both shield and all that, but his technique did get found out at the level above.
Yep.
Yeah, but he's a good player at that level.
We're going to keep a bit of an eye on that over the next few weeks and we'll report back and see how we're going. All right, mate, we're going to take a very, very quick break. When we come back, Greg Quinn, part two.
I'm Stephen Rowe and you're listening to the Game On podcast.
Past players, past legends, past legends.
You know, there's...
Yeah.
a couple of occasions where he probably should have been killed in battle, but wasn't.
Bloody oath. And then he breaks his hand as well. And that playing in the second semi against Sturt, South Adelaide side.
Correct.
It's quite incredible. And then they're worried about, obviously, the injuries he's had in the war, how that could affect then. It's just bloody amazing that he's then gone on the next year, it goes back. Hayden Bunton goes to Port. They rove together. He wins the McGarry medal with 45 votes, 17 votes ahead of a bloody legend in Doug Olds. I had the absolute privilege. Paynham had an Olds and Bold side in. And they roped in a few of us younger guys. I played a game where Doug was keeper. And I fielded slips, and he's telling me Nord stories. We're going to lose the game against Elizabeth. I've told this guy for Elizabeth, get your head down and get a nod out so you can go up next game. And he's gone, what do you care about me for, mate? I said, I don't give a stuff about you. I just want to listen to Doug Olds. So,
Dougie was a brilliant footballer, played interstate football as well for South Australia with dad. And just probably the smallest wingman ever to play league football, but he was a ripper. Dad speaks very fondly of Doug Olds.
Oh, great.
Very fondly. So
he's bolted in the McGarry medal, club best and fairest, captain South Australia against Victoria to a win on Adelaide Oval, voted best on ground. Bloody ridiculous, Quinny.
He won the goal kicking in 45, if I'm not mistaken, as well. And so he's had another. I don't know how he does it. I don't know. And because I was so young, you don't touch on it. You know, you never think of these things. I think and talk more about it now.
Yeah.
But in those days, he was just my father.
Yeah.
And he didn't talk about it, but he was. I think his record speaks for itself.
Now go to the next year's the famous game, the draw in Victoria, and Quinny, I'll be honest, I love this story you tell about. Go for that. Go for it, Quinny.
Well, he captain coaches South Australia on the MCG, and my dad was a very volatile person, and when he came back from the war, people say that he just didn't tolerate anyone, you know, just that was it. There was, you know, he'd done and seen a lot of things at war, and to play football was just a thing. So they're well down at half time, six goals, whatever. He lets them have it. He's captain coach. He lets them have it at half time, and there were some quite big names, and I won't mention who they were, but they were big names in football in those days. And he said, and apparently in his speech, he says, I don't give a bugger whether you want to come out at half time, after half time for the third quarter or not. I don't care. You can do what you like. You can pack your gear up and you can go home. But I'm going now out onto that ground, and I don't give a bugger whether any of you follow me, but I'm going. So apparently he walks out and gets out onto the oval, and apparently, as the story goes, has a look around behind him, and thankfully they all follow him out. and they finish up drawing with Victoria on the MCG. Goes back in after the game, congratulates them all on a victory, but he was rotten that they didn't win. Quite still agitated in the rooms, and in those days at the MCG, as most football clubs had, they had a doorman, which, you know, would sort of stand by the door and not sort of let people in or whatever. And Dad's, you know, just talking and whatever, and finished talking. So the doorman comes up to him, taps him on the shoulder, and says, Bob, there's a bloke at the door that wants to see you. He's very well dressed and speaks very well. And some of the comments would have been colourful to say, oh, I don't give a bugger who it is or what he is, you know, what's he wanting, you know, la, la, la. Oh, he just wants to speak to you, Bob, you know, and, I could just see him, and I won't swear, but I could just see him, fine. And so he walks out to the door, and there's this finely dressed gentleman, and The bloke said to him, "Oh, you don't recognise me, you don't know me, Quinn, do you?" And Dad said, "Yes, I do. I remember you. You're the doctor that operated on my leg on the Red Cross ship in Tobruk Harbour the night I got belted in the leg, and you saved my leg, and not only my leg, but saved my life." And Dad recognised him, and that's as the story goes, that this doctor on this ship operated on Dad's leg, and Dad threatened him not to cut his leg off. And anyway, so the doctor said, "Yes, Quinn, that's me." And he said, I'm not a fan of football. As a matter of fact, I dislike Australian rules football, but I was reading the Herald this morning and I saw the football teams, South Australia, Victoria, and I see this name, R.B. Quinn, captain coach of South Australia. And he said, my curiosity got the best of me. He said he wondered whether it was the same R.B. Quinn that I'd operated on in Tobruk Harbour. And so that's what's brought me down to this ground today to see if it was you. And it is. So, you know, I'm so pleased that I did a good job, you know. And Dad said, well, you better come in, Doc, and come in and have a beer with me, you know. And so the doctor comes into the change rooms and they're speaking, they're talking, and the doctor said, "Well, Quinn, how about you get up on that table and I'll have a look at my handiwork." So there's the captain coach of South Australia on the trainer's table, and dropped his tweeds, dropped his football shorts, and he's, you know, he's playing attire underneath that, and there's a bloke looking at his right inner thigh and said, "Oh, I did a good job, didn't I, Quinn?" And Dad said to him, "Yes, you did, doctor." And he said, "Now, if you don't mind, I'll pull my pants up and we'll go and enjoy a long neck." So they went off and they had a beer together. And that was the last time that Dad ever saw. I think his name was Dr. Rowan or some name like that. And this, you know, that was the last time they shared a beer. And then the doctor left and Dad tells that story, or told that story ad nauseum, you know, when
I love that.
Have people around. And yeah, it was a wonderful, you know, that just goes to show that I don't know who looks after us upstairs or whether someone does or not, but they threw those two boys together in war and, you know, and the doctor saved my dad's leg and saved his life at the same time.
It's one of the all-time great awesome. Footy stories, isn't it?
Love it.
Yep. Transcends everything, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It does. It makes us feel very humble. You know, the doctor, he didn't have to go, and, you know, he just couldn't believe that it was the same bloke, because that's how probably bad his leg was. He couldn't believe that he'd played football again.
I bet he was glad that he did go, though. I reckon that's fantastic. Oh, it's just an awesome story.
Yeah.
You know, obviously I've heard you tell it numerous times, Quinny, and I love it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a story that, you know, I people ask me all the time to tell that story. But there's so many others, you know, I could go on forever about, you know, stories of that he told. And mind you, I was just a little boy when he'd tell these stories, and he'd be around a few blokes and I'd had a few beers, and, you know, he said, "Oh, that reminds me, you know, that at one stage in Tobruk, there was something like 15 Australians guarding 4,000 Italian prisoners of war. And Dad was one of those people. His battalion had them all in a sand dune, like a valley of a sand dune in Tobruk. And there was like something like 4,000 or 3,500 Italian prisoners, 15 Australians on top of the sand hills, just looking after them, you know. So just stories like that of what not just my dad but those other people did, you know. So
can we flesh them out a little bit with some of those stories? I know you said
wherever you like.
Yeah, I know you said there's plenty there, but can you share a couple more with us?
No, there's some that the one in when he was in New Guinea fighting, you must realise that when the boys came back from Tobruk, they didn't change their uniforms. So they had uniforms that were for desert warfare. And then when they got shipped back, repatriated and then shipped off to New Guinea, they still had the same uniforms. So they were fighting in New Guinea in uniforms that were used for the desert, but they were in a tropical place where it was raining and all of this. So the uniforms were all wrong anyway. So there was a particular night that they were out on patrol and contact, of course, with the Japanese, and laid down next to one another. And there was three or four of them next to one another. The bloke on my dad's left got a shot to the head, killed instantly. His mate, the other side of him, took a bullet, and then they got called to come back. So Dad dragged this bloke probably 30 or 40 metres back to safety. But either side of him, it could have been the end of him then, you know. Like there was a bloke killed on his left, and this bloke took a wounding shot on his right, and they got out of it all right, and he dragged this bloke. So he's done it a couple of times, but the bloke in Tobruk and then this bloke in New Guinea, he just wouldn't leave people. So he, you know, just things like that, that he wasn't readily, he would never tell these stories all the time, but there were times as a little boy, 13 or 14, inquisitive, sitting under a table, you know, when they're all, and you'd hear these stories. And, it was a pretty gruesome sort of a thing. And that's, I think he would never talk to us children. He would never tell us those stories. He always had to sneak under a table and listen to the stories, you know. So,
well, it would have come out, you know, the Quins are synonymous. You know, so after his, you know, final year's a player, and then he decides to go to the country, and he's the pub up there, and of course the Quinn family ends up coming back and being legendary at the Southwark Hotel, which you were involved in as well, Quinny.
Yep.
So, you know, I'm sure the stories came out there, but, you know, that side of your life, you speak fondly of your time at the Southwark
and I do as well.
Quinny.
They used to, the 2nd, 43rd used to come down the first Friday in every month and have a luncheon there. So in those days, there were quite a few of them. So we'd have probably 25 to 30 2nd, 43rd returned soldiers come into the Southwark, you know, the first Friday in every month. And Dad used to go and join them for lunch, and my brother and myself would, you know, look after them and serve them, and they'd still be there at like 4 o'clock. And my brother and myself used to often say, well, I reckon they've killed more Germans here today than they did in the Second World War. but it was things like that that, you know, and blokes would wander up, and they would tell me stories about my dad. You know, he would never tell us, but that's where most of these stories come from.
And, of course, you know, naming, it's, you know, the proud honour, and so it should be, that the Anzac Day Medal is named the Bob Quinn Medal. I may have educated a couple of players along those years on how big an honour it was too. A couple may have needed a bit of educating, and I may have delivered that, Gregory.
Well done. Thank you, Malcolm. I do appreciate that. We've had the boys that have won it are all terrific sort of sportsmen and very complimentary on the day. And again, I won't mention this guy's name, but he, I've had one phone call back on the Monday morning after he won it, after it's been in excess of 20 years, and I've had one phone call to say that he was honoured to win my dad's medal. But for the rest of them, they were fantastic on the day, and it gives us just great pride to be able to go there and give them Dad's medal. We would have liked a Port Adelaide player to win it, but that'll never happen after this year, so or next year or so, if they go into the VFL. That opportunity won't come around again unless they have an exceptional year and they make the grand final. Hopefully, that's what our family wants to do, is hang that medal around a Port Magpie player. That'd be really something.
Yeah.
Was that something that the SANFL approached your family about?
Yeah, they did. I'm the youngest of the family, and I seem to cop all the stuff that happens. But yeah, they rang us, and it was an amazing day. And I don't fall off your chair, Malcolm, but I did get emotional again when this happened.
Oh no, so you should, mate.
And then I rang my sisters and I rang my brother, and we all just were just so grateful and so pleased that Dad was being recognised with this medal, and it's just fantastic. And the Sandful look after us so well on that day. They invite us to every game, and of course the Power invite us to Anzac ceremony, to the President's lunch and the President's dinner and things like that. And it's just, they've been, the Sandful and Port Adelaide have just been absolutely magnificent to our family and to my father, and we appreciate it, and they do it really well. Love, hate, or whatever, Port Adelaide, but they do a fantastic job with their return servicemen, and they make a fuss of my father every Anzac Day, which is wonderful.
No, I went to Albany on Friday night, and Port spit before the game. It's very good. I'll always speak glowingly of Port Adelaide in that way. And, obviously, I don't speak glowingly of Port Adelaide in any other way, Quinny, but huge respect. Mate.
Generally, Port Adelaide do it very well, where they do look after, you know, their past players and past servicemen as well. But I think that's one thing that a lot of clubs would love to emulate.
I'm sure. And, you know, as Dad's, you know, immediate family, that's just, you know, they make a fuss of him, and he wouldn't like it. He wouldn't like it, but he's left it to us to pick up the pieces, and we really appreciate it. It's wonderful.
Righto, Quinny. Mm. Now let's go on to Greg Quinn, the cricketer, because you didn't. Really, I did notice. I did notice you did play some reserves game for Port. But let's go to the cricketer. Yeah, I've got a lot of time for Greg Quinn as a cricketer. 199 A grade games, so there's still time, Quinny. You know, there's still time for that 200th.
Yes.
Seven Charlie Walkers. Now, as I said, I didn't realise the family link, the ironic bit there, that the Charlie Walker Trophy is who the A-grade District Keeper of the Year is named after. Greg has won that seven times. The bar at East Torrens is named the Greg Quinn Bar as well. Yeah. So Greg is a legend at East Torrens.
Does that include a free drink every home game?
Well, the thing is, if you drink with me in the cricket season at that bar, you do get free drinks. Yeah, so you need to come and drink with me one day.
Yeah, you're safe with me. You're safe with me in that
regard. No, but not so with me. Yeah, maybe I might be able to visit one day.
Yeah.
you can do both of you again. That's fine.
So, Quinny there, seven-time Charlie. Oh, look, I think you were very unlucky state-wise. There was a game, England games. I'm drawing this totally off my head here, Quinny. Trying to remember there. That's correct, isn't it? You played a game?
No, I played. I played a second eleven game. Yeah, and I got taken to Western Australia on standby for a Sheffield Shield game, and the wicketkeeper, who was sick at the time, got well overnight. I was flown in on the Wednesday, I think. 4-day game, so I flew in on the Wednesday. It was 100 degrees in Perth. The current wicketkeeper was sick in bed, so I did training on the Wednesday. Went to the ground on Thursday and took warm ups and had a hit and had a catch, and that was the first day of the game. And then our state wicketkeeper felt better because there was a huge weather change. It went from 43 to about 22, and he felt a lot better. And so I was on the next flight Friday night back to Adelaide.
Jeez, you didn't do that well, though, Quinny. You should have slipped something into him there as well. Now, I'm just trying to work it out. Mike, who would that have been?
That was David Kelly.
It was Kells, right.
Yep. And so Kells had me covered with his batting. and he was a good player as well. But it was a little bit unfortunate. But anyway, that's as close as I got.
So Trevor Robertson was around as well during your...
Just as I started, Trevor was just finishing. I played probably 2 years against Trevor. Don't ask me when I started or when I won those battles, because I got I can't remember what I had for breakfast.
But were you a bit unlucky there that your batting cost you, Quinny, in that way? Why did you think?
I don't know. Probably. I batted everywhere at East Torrens from one to probably eight, and in one season, I made two centuries in a season at East Torrens. Virtually one game in between, I made a 30, so I made 100, and then a 30, then another 100 in three games, and I was sort of on top of it there. I opened the batting in those games, and my batting sort of was what sort of held me back a bit. But
you're a fighter. You value your wicket.
I was never a fluent player. I was always sort of my job in those days was to open the batting and to take the shine off the ball. And you know, if I nicked a few and got a few away, then and as those two games worked out, that I got away a little bit, and one against Teacher Gully and the other one against Glenelg. And the Glenelg one was good because I played against David Johnson, who was a really good bowler for Glenelg.
Yeah, wingman as well. Yep, good wingman as well.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, good league footballer. John
been involved down at Tasmanian cricket for a long time. Yeah.
Yep, correct.
So there too, in terms of, I'd love to see a couple of South Australian batsmen at the moment value their wicket as much as you did, Quinny.
we both would, mate.
Yes. So. Yeah. In terms of that too, where to your credit, how old was your last A grade district game? Were you then, Greg?
38. I was 38.
Okay, but you have kept playing. Now I reckon, how old were you? Were you kept on your birthday for Para Hills? I reckon it was a Sunday 2020 game down at Unley. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah. So I played. I played at East Torrens, and I played 5 years in B grade, 5 in C grade, 2.5 in D grade, and then I went and worked. And then I didn't play for quite a while, but then I got the Para Hills job. And I was 63, I reckon,
and when I was still playing. Still kept bloody well, Pete.
I played A1 when I was 63, nearly 64 probably, and... Yeah, so then I sort of – it's because I think I like the game. I finished playing football last 26.
You love the game. Don't bullshit me. You like the game. Yeah, you
love it. But it's a tough position no matter when you're playing it.
He's a gun keeper too, trust me.
Yeah, I was – I really enjoyed it, and I enjoy the the thing that I probably got from my father was he enjoyed the people that he played his sport with, and I think it rubs off. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree when those things happen. And, I thoroughly enjoyed my time at East Torrens, and I was so proud to be able to play for that club for so long, probably in excess of 27 years, I think, I played at East Torrens. And, I played a little bit at Goodwood in LO5.
Yeah,
and,
that's right.
Then I went back to Para Hills, and I've been at Para Hills now for 10 years and just got my life membership at Para Hills last year. So that was a great honour for me just to have life membership of East Torrens and Para Hills. It means a great deal to me, those two clubs.
And was your father involved in your cricket a little bit? I'm sure he wanted you to play football, but...
He was. Him and Mum used to come every... when I was playing cricket for East Torrens, Dad was a big golfer, so he'd play golf on Saturday mornings. So they'd hit off at Sparrow's Fart, 6 o'clock, and he always finished and then come back home and pick up Mum, and they'd bring their lunch, and they'd always come to – they both followed my cricket. Every game I played, every Saturday, they were there, and Dad loved cricket. He wasn't a bad cricketer himself. He played a little bit in Kadena as an older guy. He was all right, Dad. He was a bit of a – wicket keeper and a bit of a batter, and he wasn't a bad cricketer, but I reminded him a couple of times that he never played district cricket where I had, and he said, "Well, how many league games of league football have you played?" And I said, "Well, not many, Dad, so we won't go there, you know." But we always he was a fantastic supporter of my sport. At the age, I was probably 24, 25, and I was playing for Salisbury North in Division 2 SAFA, and we lived at Tea Tree Gully, and he used to come and watch me play football as well, and he was on to me about being fit and running, and, you know, you've got to be, because you're small, you've got to be the fittest bloke out there. And he used to make me, even at the age of 25 and 26, so we lived at Tea Tree Gully, not far from the Tea Tree Gully Golf Club, so he'd make me come out of cricket season. He said he'd got to catch up. So his regime was for me to run from Tea Tree Gully to Salisbury North for football training. So I'd run from Tea Tree Gully to Salisbury North to go to football training. And that was his, that was the way he ran us. So.
Hang on, he's getting you to run from Tea Tree Gully to Salisbury, yet he just had to row across the river.
Row across the river.
How does that work?
Bit of Glenn and Leighton Hewitt in that one, mate.
Yeah. But he also used to do it in the cricket season. So when I come out of football, and in those days I was in the state squad, so I'd run from Tea Tree Gully to Adelaide Oval for cricket training. Well, that's why he worked it, and he said, "I'll come pick you up and bring me home," but he wanted me to be, you know, fit and all that, and that was just his regime. So I was a good runner in those days, boys. So.
Yeah, no, I don't think too much has changed there, Quinny. You're certainly one of the more fitter people of your age and all that, well and truly. Yeah. Quinny, in terms there, where do you see cricket at in general at the moment? Yeah, I think you and I are probably not lovers of the 2020 game overall. And
no.
Where do you see cricket as a whole at?
I get a little bit disappointed with our performances in South Australia. I was fielding coach for the Redbacks for 4.5 years, and there was a lot of, in those days, there was a big under-19 championship carnival that used to run for 2 weeks. And over that period of time, we produced a lot of first-class cricketers that would come out of that carnival. And those boys played 90 overs a day, two-day games for a fortnight. I was away for a fortnight with those boys for like 9 years I did that. And, you know, guys like Graham Manu and Tate, Cullen, Ferguson, Cosgrove, Ryan Harris, both Borges boys. And we had a lot of all those boys, Daniel Harris.
That's pretty strong there.
You know, and we had a lot of boys that played in that under-19 carnival that all went through and played Sheffield Shield and first-class cricket, and some of them for Australia. I just think that they've dropped the ball a bit there where they need to harden those boys up a little bit and get them playing that carnival again over 2 weeks, where these days I think it runs over 4 days and they might play 2 one-day 50-over games and the rest of T20s. Yeah. And that disappoints me a bit. And it also disappoints me that obviously where South Australia have been for the last 10 or 12 years is disappointing. There are some very, very talented players in our state, but it's very young. They're all really young, and the retention of players that want to play cricket is very difficult these days because no one wants to play, you know, and train three times a week just to play grade cricket and then play Saturdays and Sundays. So it's virtually a 5-day week of cricket, and they don't seem to want to do it these days.
Oh, look, and let's be blatantly honest. Without the explosion of Indian, Sri Lankan and Pakistani cricketers playing here, there would be a lot of clubs have gone under. And I'll include Paynham in that in terms of and clubs around the traps.
Yeah.
And
even the Root Academy and the Lehman Academy. Lehman Academy bring 23, 24 players out here every summer and have done for nearly 8 or 9 years. And the thing that got me in the last couple of – or the last year is that we have 23, 24 English cricketers. And some of them have got contracts for county teams back there.
Yep.
And yet the wisdom of our administrators at the SACA decide to play, pick an under 19 team to play in the district competition. Yeah. Why they're not playing the Lehman Academy boys in that competition is beyond me.
Oh.
They're here. The yeah. players are here.
Yeah.
Why do we have to take the best under 19 cricketers away from their grade club to play against their own grade club at some stage? Oh,
crazy.
Where we've got 20 odd Englishmen that are capable, and the bloke said to me one day, he said, "Oh, what if they win it? You know, what if they win the Premiership?"
Right.
Well,
so good. What? Yeah.
Yeah. Then maybe our players have to be better.
Yeah.
You know, so.
No, this year, so yeah, and let's go through that with a couple there. Matchett last year, young Matchett, played in yep. the Kensington Premiership side. He was the kid, batting 7 or 8, whatever. Yep. Kensington, the next year, as happens, Lou Brown retires. They lose yep. Ross and Dalton.
Yep.
He would have gone up and batted 4 or 5, which is what you want from the kid as the development.
Exactly.
No, he yep. ends up having to captain that second 11, the side in the second bit, having to captain it, and also having to captain it under the rules of whether you restricted bowling numbers under the kid's ruling. So there was one game they had him 3 for 15, and he had to take the kid off who had 3 for 5. Oh. Yeah,
and it's ridiculous. And some of those boys that played in that second division team would have played against their own clubs, Malcolm.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't be exposed to that. And they got their bum wiped a couple of times this year, but they also won a couple of games.
Yeah.
But... Oh. Those boys would have been served better about playing for their clubs and not just trying to survive in that team.
Yeah, and that's what they were trying to survive. Is the
trying
word.
To do. Trying not to, you know, try not to lose. Let's not lose. Whoever coached them, I can't remember who coached them, but I would think they would say to those boys, let's try not to lose instead of, well, hang on, I should be playing for Kensington Northern District, but I've got to play against them, which is wrong. And I just think that, The Lehman Academy, and they're fantastic cricketers, because I worked for them for 3 years with their wicketkeepers.
Yep.
And they're terrific players. And, yes, they might win it, you know, in Division 2 or anything. But, hey, let's play them. And they're always looking for games. And,
oh, yeah. You know, they are the kids who are looking to play cricket.
Yeah.
They'd be happy playing every Saturday and Sunday. You know, so with why not other, make use of that? Yeah.
Yeah, with each other and playing in the T20 competitions and things like that. And you know yourself, boys, that when you play against people that are good players, your game actually gets better as well. You get better at it because you have to if you want to hold your spot. So,
and I think you and I are very much on the same page here too, Greg.
It was an experiment this year with the change. Do we see it potentially being reverted back or tweaked again?
Did the Lehman thing even get mentioned though and suggested?
I got asked by a board member to speak about grade cricket, and again, I won't mention his name because he's a friend of mine, and we spoke, and I said, why aren't you looking at doing this? And we'll have already made our mind up. I said, well, unmake your mind.
Yeah, bloody oath.
Unmake it and revert back. And I think, boys, that I think because they've made that decision that it would look pretty stupid if they didn't do it again this year and have two divisions, which I don't know. A classic example of East Torrens this year. I would think there'd be some boys leave East Torrens this year because they want to play in Division 1, which is it's a worry for my club, and I hope it doesn't happen. I hope it doesn't happen.
To Sturt's credit, this year the guys stuck together.
And it paid off.
Yeah, so hopefully.
And they were always going to win it because they're a very strong team and a very strong committed administrator. They do a good job. So I don't think they'll change it because I think they'll be made to look stupid if they
admitted that.
But at least you've tried something new. But if it's not the right way, isn't it better to try something a little bit different and see if you can finally get it right?
Yeah, I can see that, Pete, because we need to do that. We need to – I'm tired, sick and tired. The last time I coached on the coaching panel at the Redbacks was quite a while ago now, a long time ago, and I was fielding coach and Peter Muggleton was bowling coach and Mark Sorrell was head coach. We ran third in every competition. Now – I reckon they'd probably take that now, wouldn't they?
Bloody hell, we would.
Oh, yeah. I know the man sitting across from me would be jumping for joy.
it means we're still in contention that last couple of games.
Yeah, and the three of us got the sack the next year for not, well, all three of us had never played first-class cricket, but we got asked to leave because we'd run third, third and third. I reckon they'd take it now, wouldn't they?
Yeah. And also, Quinny, again, I think it's an area I'm very strong on, and I'm sure you're the same in terms of if we're going to go down, I want to go down playing South Australian kids, not recruit these fringe players from interstate. Mm. There was nothing against young Cardner as a person or anything, but it was farcical, the opportunities he got where Kelvin Smith wasn't playing.
Yeah.
And he's now, Kelvin's not in the squad. Yes, he didn't make enough runs to think. Same thing with Bobby Davis, but geez, their numbers at grade level demand more opportunities than both of them have received.
And they're older guys, and you know I think patience is a virtue. And this game, you know, when you coach or when you play cricket, it demands being patient. And when you select, whether it's for Paynham or whether it's for Para Hills or whether it's for East Torrens or West Torrens or for the Redbacks, patience is a virtue and people don't seem to have that anymore. The old scenario, give him three games and see how he goes. No. How about we stick fat with him for a little while?
Yeah, exactly.
And just see what these boys can produce.
Which is exactly what should have happened with Kelvin this year. They should have given him the year and gone with it. Now, too, one thing I don't think I've ever told you this, Quinny. So it was actually on the week of the tragic passing of Phil Hughes, which you obviously knew Phil with.
Yep.
So, and Paynham happened, Para Hills happened to play Pembroke that weekend, of which I was coaching and all that.
Yep.
And I watched Para Hills, you guys do your warm up, and I'm sitting there as coach going, I would love to do this to the Pembroke guys, but if I tried to do that, I know if I tried to do that, I reckon I would have been lucky to have two players the next week.
And
a bit of, you know, Quinny obviously held a bit more sway than I did and all that, but I would have loved to have been that hard, but I just knew I couldn't be.
It's part of it, and it's a patience thing. And you know, my philosophy with coaching and it's just my philosophy is that as a coach I coached East Torrens and also coached Para Hills, and you as a coach you have to have a relationship with the best player in your club, and you have to have a relationship with the worst player and everyone in between.
Yep.
And it just doesn't seem to be fitting our Redback system at the moment where there just doesn't seem to be that continuity and people not knowing where they go, where they belong, what should they be doing, how they could play and planning and things like that. And I brought that to – well, I tried that at Para Hills and it's worked. You know, we do small things like – before we go to the cricket, we put our polo top on at our own house and we travel to the ground in our polo top. Now, that does nothing for the game. But before you leave your house, you're putting that top on and you're thinking about playing for Para Hills.
Yeah.
And it happens before you even get anywhere. You know, sometimes we play Ranella. You know, but the trip down to Ranella, you're still wearing your Para Hills top. And it just doesn't seem to be that way where people just seem to turn up how they want to turn up. And there's no structure and, you're not allowed to talk harsh to them. You're not allowed to tell them what to do.
It is hard. Yeah.
You've got to be careful. You can't, you know, coaches are walking around on eggshells because everyone's so so fragile, you know, you've got to be careful. And to be quite honest with you, I am happy that I'm not coaching now, because everyone's so fragile. The phone calls I used to get Friday nights, and one bloke rang me early in the season, said, "I can't play this week, Greg." And I said, "Oh, why is that?" He said, "Oh, it's my grandma's birthday." And, you know, I said, "Oh, that's okay, that's fine." You know, well, sure enough, after Christmas, the Christmas break, a couple of games in, he said, "Oh, I can't play." You know, I said, "Oh, why is that?" "Oh, it's my grandma's birthday." I said, "Jesus, she must be 150. She's had two birthdays in 1 year, you know." So they don't realise that they, you know, they tell lies to you that coaches...
Yeah, you remember it, bloody oath. Oh, yeah. Mm.
Now, can we get back to your playing career a little bit? Representation overseas?
Just as over-60s cricketer, yeah. I've played over-60s for Australia. I've toured England twice. Had three series against them at home. I captained for a New Zealand tour away, and I've represented my state as over-60s cricketer as well. So, yeah, that's been a great joy for me. I've loved it. And
so who are the other South Australians involved there? So it's, Peter Judd?
Yeah, that's towards the end of it,
yeah.
Malcolm. But
Fav?
Fav's played. I've played a couple of games with Fav, but early days, like 10 years ago when I first turned 60, I was the only one for probably 5 years, I reckon.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, I was trying to work that out in my head then.
But, no, this gives me a lot of joy and made some fantastic friends. And, you know, we won the Ashes in 10 years ago, so 04, 05, and that was fantastic. And we haven't got close to them since. So I've now moved up to over 70. That gives me the willies also, but what it is. But no, I do enjoy it, and I have loved playing for South Australia and representing my country as an over 60s cricketer, which, you know, it's a bit of an achievement, I suppose.
What was it like getting the baggy green? I know it's not the true baggy green, but it is a baggy green.
It was great. It was fantastic. You know, unfortunately, we have to pay for our own accommodation, airfares, and everything, and the hat comes with it. But I still enjoy. You know, I slip it on sometimes at home. I haven't worn it for a while because I haven't been that healthy for the last 2.5 years. But I'm fine now, and I slip it on sometimes when no one's looking. Just have a look in the mirror.
Why not?
Some places you could wear that, or it could be more than appropriate, Quinny. Best players played with and against Quinny.
Oh man, that's Peter. Malcolm, you're doing it. You're killing me here.
You can give us two or three.
You did play.
Guys, I played with at East Torrens.
Yeah.
Joe Scuderi was absolutely sensational. We had two boys that were very, very young when they first started and became great East Torrens cricketers, Craig Bradbrook, Graham Yates.
Yep.
Also played with Andrew Sincock.
Evil,
and also David Hooks. So, you know, there's nearly a full team there. And Neil Plummer was a very, very good cricketer. Yeah, fantastic cricketer. You know, guys like Ashley Woodcock and those blokes I played with also. The best ones I've played against, I reckon Orch from
James Orchard
from James Orchard from Sturt is one that
hard
just hitter. He was a magnificent cover drive. Who else was there? I also played against Nason that coached
Jack Nason. Yep.
Jack Nason that coached Woodville.
Yep.
And he was just
lovely bloke,
tenacious. Tenacious. He was one of my favourites. Stevie Gentle, excellent
Keeper
wicket keeper that I played against. Steamer Wilson was just one of the quickest bowlers that I've played. Wayne Pryor, scary, very scary.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, Darren Lehman, Wayne Bradbrook. It's funny how they're all Salisbury players, isn't it? You know, that was a nightmare playing against them. But I've been really fortunate in playing with and against some of the all-time greats.
Barry Crosby played the best shot I've seen in district cricket. It was on number two, and he flicked it over the slips, you know, the shot over the slips, and it smashed straight through a windscreen in the car park at number two.
Yeah, no, he was a good player, Cause, and the year, you know, I think
that was the year where he made the 1,000 runs. Yeah,
yeah. Someone told me that year that I think Mark Sherrill might have told me that. In their A grade that year, there were 20 centuries in the season in the A grade. Like, really, good luck trying to beat them.
Yeah.
But no, there's been some terrific players, and I've enjoyed it all and still enjoying it and look forward to Saturday afternoons. It's great.
Before we let you go, we'll get you out of here on this one. Obviously, your dad, Bob, would have talked about some of his top three or four players that he played against and play with. Can you shed a little bit of light on that before we let you go tonight?
Well, he was a great admirer of Fred Fanning, the big forward for Melbourne. He just admired Fred because Fred was in front of his time, the big guy that was mobile, and I think he still holds a record to today.
Yeah, 18 goals. Yep.
So he was one of Dad's favourites. He was one of Dad's favourites, but he respected him. Lou Richards, after the war, they locked horns in that drawn game. He had respect for him. He didn't like him all that much, but he had respect for him. Lou Roberts, who played centre for Port Adelaide, Dad said that he was just a fantastic centreman. And Lou was one of the first people to cut the tops off his football boots and cut them off and wore them as shoes. There's one for you. He was the one. He said you might as well be comfortable as uncomfortable, and he cut the top off his Lou Roberts. His name wasn't. He was Dad said he was a fantastic centreman for South Australia and Port Adelaide. Of course, Revel, Alan Revel, Big Bob. They formed that illustrious
combination.
You know, combination. But he respected them all. You know, he had good duels with the great Jack Odie and things like that as Rovers. And he has Ken Farmer. You mentioned him quite a bit. So Dad was sort of on the end of Dad was finishing. Ken was sort of around the mark, but Dad used to go and watch him play. So he was a fan of Ken Farmer's.
Oh.
So there's some names that some of your listeners may remember. Yeah.
Hey, Quinny, greatly appreciated, mate. Look forward to catching up and that shortly. And love the stories about Bob. You and I are pretty much on the same wavelength on cricket. We may discuss that at various times as well.
Yeah.
I think we too often disagree, by the way.
Thank you for your time.
Greatly appreciate it, Quinny.
Explaining it, that's fantastic.
No problems, boys. And on behalf of the Quinn family and you know, we do thank you for the interest you show in our family, and it's been a pleasure talking to both of you tonight.
And pretty big achievement. You've played so much cricket with Mitch as well, too. There's not too many fathers and sons can probably claim that to that extent as well, Quinny.
I don't think he probably enjoyed it as much as I did.
Maybe not.
It's for another day.
Hey, greatly appreciate it, mate. Thanks, Quinny.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Catch you. Bye-bye. Bye.
And we thank Quinny for his time there. And like you said a little bit earlier on, he gave us a little bit of feedback and he enjoyed the interview. And it's just fantastic to hear about his cricketing career at the end of that interview there.
Yep, 100 as we mucked around there. I tell you what, though, if there's any 70-year-old who could come out and keep, it's still Greg Quinn.
Yep.
His fitness levels are ridiculous.
Who knows, he might get a call up for one of the teams this year. They might put in a... put in a call. That'd be interesting to see and record and watch for sure. So we thank Quinny for his time there. Let's get into the Extra Time Big Finish.
Yep.
Extra Time Big Finish.
All right, mate, we should wrap this one up reasonably quickly today. We'll kick off with tennis. Huge week for Australian tennis players. Some of their juniors or lower-ranked junior players that are making their way into the system having some pretty good gains. Alex Dimonor and Jordan Thompson still leading the men's, with Alexei Popyrin making a small charge up the ladder. But in the women's, Daria Saville has jumped 12 positions in the last week, so moving up to number 84. Like we said before, her injuries previously have sort of precluded her from playing a little bit, but now that she's back on the court, she's obviously doing pretty well. And Rodanova just going down a couple of spots, but still sitting just outside the top 100. And in the men's, Matt Ebden, Matt Purcell, and Jordan Thompson all making very, very good gains. Ebden, who is the number one player in the world, just lost a couple of spots to number three, but Jordan Thompson moving up 22 spots.
Yeah, so Ebden's the number one doubles.
That's correct. Yeah, doubles, yeah. Absolutely. So he's just gone from number one to number three, but that changes from week to week at the moment. So playing very, very well. All right, let's move on to the NBA. We've got some conference semifinals. We've got the Boston Celtics taking on the Cleveland Cavaliers. At the moment, that series is pending. It'll be playing over the next few days. We've got the New York Knicks playing against the Indiana Pacers. The Oklahoma Thunder, which is Josh Giddey's team from Australia there, playing the Dallas Mavericks. And in the other conference semifinal, we've got the Minnesota Timberwolves playing against the Denver Nuggets. So some interesting matchups there, and it seems like the longest final series for any sport in the world.
Yeah, it does go on and on.
Because, you know, they play their first round of finals, they play the best of four or five games, then the next one's four or five games, and then the final is like the best of seven. So it just seems like it goes on forever. We'll leave that one where it is for now. All right, let's move on to the NRL very, very quickly. The Sharks, Storm, Panthers, Dolphins, Seagulls, Roosters, Broncos and Bulldogs rounding out the top eight in the NRL. I'm just still so impressed with the Melbourne Storm. They always seem to be around the mark.
Yep. Keep challenging every, you know, every year they seem to be always up and about challenging.
And for a non-traditional rugby state, it's just a huge thing, isn't it?
Yep.
They've played eight games, seven wins, one loss. And are a game clear, first and second with the Sharks at the moment. So thoroughly impressed with the Melbourne Storm. We'll keep a bit of an eye on that one there. No. We'll leave the soccer finals between the A-League teams. We'll leave that till once I'm back, because we'll have a bit of a clearer picture of where that is all at. But we'll move on to the golf. Ripper GC backing up at the LIV event in Singapore, making it back-to-back wins in the team's event. That is absolutely sensational.
It is. It's a huge effort with what you consider the class of the opposition to go back-to-back there. That's a big result.
You know, Cam Smith was asked a little while ago whether he preferred the individual results or the team results. Might be changing his mind a little bit on the team results, because they've been going along very, very well lately. And Brooks Koepka obviously won the individual title there. So, look, can they make it three in a row? We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see, but always good to back it up. And Adelaide getting a big mention on the LIV Tour once again, because they'd obviously won it the week before, and we get a bit more promotion, which is great.
Oh, and all you're hearing around the traps is, even as not a, you know, like Craig's far more golfing person, Craig Martin, but just overall, is that they're considering Adelaide their best event
of
golf, which it's a big tick for little old Adelaide.
Agreed. 100%. All right, let's finish off with just a general question about football. Is an amateur league club losing by 500-plus points a bad look for local football?
Yes. Yeah, no, it's terrible.
It's a bit of a worry, isn't it?
I actually been with a guy on the Friday night. He thought they were forfeiting the next day, so they've managed, you know, if they're going to finish the season or not, we won't see. Mm-hmm. But, geez, it's not 80-something goals to nothing.
82 goals, 516 to nothing, 0.0. Not great. Does that mean something needs to be looked at from the local level?
Yeah.
Because they seem to have some good juniors. They have a lot of juniors playing out there.
Yeah, I'm not just,
Yeah, I'm not sure really what Amateur League can do as a whole about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a worry where it seems to be follows clubs around in that area, and it's been different clubs over time. And
yep.
It's Elizabeth's turn at the moment.
Yep.
Look, I hope they come back. That is the club of the Platins.
Yep.
So I hope they get out of it. But at the moment, geez, it's not good.
It's not a good look. All right, mate, let's finish off very, very quickly. The good, the bad, the ugly for this week for you, mate.
Well, I think that result's probably as much as in the bad ugly.
The ugly,
the ugly in that way. Oh, look, yeah, I can't deny it. I think on the bad, I'll go Rosie playing.
Yep.
I think that was just a big stuff up.
Yep.
Overall, you know, there. And as it got pointed out again on Friday night, they also had the port bit where they collided, Aaliyah and Jones collided, and they both weren't ruled out with concussion originally a couple of years ago, and then this thing. So it's not a tick on their medical staff at the moment. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. Good, I'll go Adelaide winning, but yeah, whatever. Yeah, I think I'm still in live golf and gather round.
Yeah.
Well done, Adelaide. I reckon still as good as anything.
Absolutely. I can't disagree with you there. Adelaide for me, but more on the tick for them was probably their want, their hunger, their perseverance, I think was good. And I think they've actually unearthed some backmen that can actually gel quite well together, and their intercept marking at the moment seems to be right on point. So they've got it just about right.
And they hopefully get Murray. Well, Murray starts hopefully playing again the next 3 to 5. So,
yep.
Yeah.
My bad one's probably Draper and his comments about Bevo. You don't want to give fuel to your opposition at any of time, but for an opposition player to come out and speak about a coach just was a bad, bad look for me. And a bit like you, the ugly, unfortunately, is some local football, whether it be here in SA or anywhere in the country where teams are getting absolutely belted. Just doesn't do anybody any good at all.
Oh, look, on the Draper bit, yeah, we love to hear someone being honest and all that, but I actually don't think that does a great good for anyone. Mm-hmm. And I can guarantee Eston would be filthy with him for saying it. So I just think it wasn't smart.
Yep.
Doesn't really achieve much.
Yep.
Yeah. Will that help Essendon get a couple of players out of it? I wouldn't thought so.
No, not at all. All right, mate, let's wrap it up there today. Just before we head off, as I mentioned a little bit earlier in the episode, the next couple of weeks we've got a couple of flashback episodes with our favourite interviews or some of our favourite interviews, so keep an eye out for those ones there. Other than that, mate, it's been a huge week in sport. I will see you in a couple of weeks' time, and as per usual, we promise to do better.
All the best with the hammer and tack and in general, mate.
Thank you very much, you too.
In this crazy world we live in, we all need the distraction. Enjoying the show? Like, rate, and subscribe. Hook up and connect with us on social media at SportsCastSA. We'll see you next time on Game On.